What's up, guys? You're listening to the most captivating podcast in iTunes. That's right, the Elite Man Podcast, where we turn average men into elite men every day. We record episodes and interview the very best experts from around the world and cover topics relating to health, success, mindset, business, and even social issues. And each week, we give you some of the best advice and information on the planet. Subscribe now if you haven't already and enjoy the show. And oh yeah, if you really enjoy it, leave us a review. Your elite life begins now.
On today's episode, episode number 347, entitled How to Reach Peak Physical and Mental Condition as You Get Older, I chat with Dr. Mike Simpson. Dr. Mike Simpson is a former Airborne Ranger, Green Beret, Doctor of Emergency Medicine assigned to the Joint Special Operations Command, JSOC, and best-selling author of Honed, Finding Your Edge as a Man Over 40. In today's episode, Mike talks about how he's been able to stay in such great shape and how he keeps up with men half his age. He breaks down the process for staying young, sharp, and healthy using world-class tactics and habits. If you're wondering how to find your edge despite the aging process of life, check this episode out now. You are going to love it. Have you guys checked out Elite Life Nutrition's Super Active B50 Complex yet? This B complex is absolutely incredible, and it has all the activated forms of the B vitamins in it. So oftentimes when you go to the store, you see a B50 complex or a B complex on the shelf, and it's full of the synthetic, cheap, crap B vitamins in them. So you take this B vitamin supplement and you think you're doing good for your body, but you're actually literally doing nothing because your body can't absorb any of those forms of the B vitamins that are in those complexes. So even though it has a name brand say on it and it's, you know, in your retail big box store, it is essentially completely useless. So you want to get the B vitamins that have the activated forms, things like riboflavin 5-phosphate for B2, the pyridoxal 5-phosphate for B6, the L5 methyl tetrahydrofolate, that's a mouthful, and then things like the methylcobalamin for the B12. Those are the activated types of forms found in the B vitamins. And again, this B vitamin for Elite Life Nutrition has all of the activated forms, so your body can actually utilize the vitamins it's taking in. Essentially, you're actually getting what you're paying for, not just throwing away your money. So make sure you check it out today. Of course, the B vitamins, as you know, can help support optimal mood, emotional wellness, nerve, cognitive, immune system function, brain function, memory function, the mental, physical, and emotional state of the body. It really is so critical and so many processes throughout the body and brain. Of course, none of these statements have been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration, and this product is not intended to diagnose, treat, or cure any disease. But with that said, I do have to say the Elite Life Nutrition B complex that we have is absolutely incredible. So go to EliteLifeNutrition.com and order yourself a couple of bottles today. All right, guys, we're live. It's Justin Stenstrom from Elite Man Magazine, and my guest today is Dr. Michael Simpson, the author of the book Honed, Finding Your Edge as a Man Over 40. Mike, thanks so much for coming on the show, man.
Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I really appreciate you coming on, man. I looked through your bio and checked out the book a little bit, and it's very impressive. It's really cool. And, you know, your background, as we just talked about, some people, it's very rare, but I guess some people are offended by your background and your military credentials. But I actually am one of those people who respects that and really appreciates what you've done for this country. And you know, just I'm sure all the people you come across, especially as men, is somebody like a mentor, guys that, you know, we can look up to.
I appreciate that. You know, I always feel a little bit awkward when people say, hey, thank you for your service, because I feel like I know a secret that they don't know, because I had this great time for 32 years and jumped out of airplanes and played with explosives. Wow. And, you know, did, you know, jumped out of helicopters into the water, and, you know, took rubber boats all through Panama and Honduras and other places, and went to, you know, got to visit, you know, jungles in Germany and of course Iraq and Afghanistan. And I had a ball basically for 32 years, and I was getting a paycheck for it. So when people, oh, thank for your service, I'm like, you know, that's like if you walked out of Disneyland and somebody said, thank you very much. That's a little bit how I feel about it. I mean, there was hard stuff, but I loved it. I wouldn't have done it for 32 years if I didn't love it as much as I did.
Yeah. That's awesome, man. So yeah, I mean, it's similar too, in a way of,
you know, being an entrepreneur and doing something that you love, being a business owner, doing something you love. It's like you work, sometimes you put in 70, 80, 90 hour weeks. And it's like, how the hell, someone from the outside is like, how the hell do you work 90 hours this week? And I'm like, honestly, it doesn't really feel like work. You're just doing something you really enjoy. Time flies by and you feel weird doing something else. Like you want to be doing what you love.
Yeah. Whereas you're working a job that you hate, you're like watching the clock.
Yeah.
I just can't wait to this pain. I just want it to be over.
Exactly. It's weird how time is like that. And it's really just the perception of it. Cause it obviously it stays the same no matter what you're doing, but your perception of it changes and, you know, time flies when you don't want it to. And, you know, it slows down when you do want it to pick up.
Absolutely true.
But, I'm guessing your age, you said like 30 years or so in the military, you must be about 50 years old or so.
I'm 55.
Wow. You look great, man. Really?
Thanks.
Yeah. You're doing a lot of things right.
Yeah. I try, you know, I try to, everything I talk about in the book, you know, about living healthy, you know, I really try to do, I avoid kind of the big offenders, you know, the things that, you know, I don't smoke. I try to limit, much as I love a bacon cheeseburger, you know, I try to eat healthy. I drink a lot of water. I don't have a lot of big vices. You know, I like a good, good scotch with a cigar every so often. I like a good glass of wine. I like a good ribeye steak, but I don't see every day as an indulgence. And I enjoy living a healthy lifestyle. I enjoy eating healthy and working out and kind of doing all the right things. You know, it's, I got a lot of scars on the inside. You know, my MRIs are a train wreck, to be honest with you, herniated discs and, you know, a bone on bone hip and bad knees and everything else. But it's all stuff that I'm able to work around and stay active. You know, I would much rather have that type of stuff going on than, you know, just, you know, these guys that you see, and I see them, guys that are 5-10 years younger than me, and they look 60, they're doing everything wrong, and they're 35 pounds overweight, and they're smoking and drinking too much alcohol, and they don't drink water. They haven't been to the doctor to get a checkup in years, going out without sunscreen, you know, all the, you know, not getting enough sleep, which I'm sure, you know, is true probably for 60% of your audience, right? Because, globally, that's the lack of sleep in developed countries is huge. You know, in developing countries, it's not as much of an issue. You know, they sleep fine. They got other shit they got to worry about. but for us, we find reasons to, you know, Netflix interferes with our sleep, you know, we're worrying about, you know, the light that went on in our dashboard at a Mercedes that we got to have taken care of tomorrow. We find other things to interfere with our sleep that we probably shouldn't.
Yeah. Sleep is really one of the biggest ones. And, you know, sleep, diet, nutrition, supplements, those are all huge. But I think sleep really is the biggest one and kind of the one that people tend to neglect. Even myself at times, you know, as a busy guy, I'm sure you've come across that as well. But, you know, it's like, you know, we can, you know, kind of slack on it a little bit because we can make up in other areas. Like we'll take a nap or we'll, you know, take some caffeine, some coffee, whatever. We feel like we're good. But really, it takes its toll because when you sleep, that's when like all the garbage is cleaned out. You're detoxifying, you're getting all the stuff that's going to damage your cells and actually age you. It really is, I think, 7 to 9 hours. And I get 7 hours on a good day. So I'm kind of like a victim to this as well, or, you know, something I should improve on. But 7 to 9 hours seems to be the sweet spot where the most good is done in that kind of area.
Yeah, I agree. And you hit on all the kind of the highlights that I nail down in my sleep chapter. And there's a reason that I dedicated a whole chapter to sleep. And there's a reason I put it towards the front of the book because it's so neglected. And I mentioned this in that chapter that I honestly felt like if I put that as like, okay, this is a day in the life and I put sleep at the end, that everybody would read all the fun parts about working out and jujitsu and diet and supplements, and then they're off and go, all right, I'm going to go put all this to use. So for that reason, I put it towards the front of the book, and it really is extremely important. And I have a lifetime of sleep difficulties. I, as an adolescent in high school, before I ever even shipped off to the military, I had a lot of sleep problems. I have had a lot of problems falling asleep. And then when I got in the military, and I've talked about this to people before, literally my very first morning waking up in the military when the lights turned on, and it was, I don't know, 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning, and the lights turned on. The first thought that entered my brain is, I don't think I can fucking do this every day. Like this. Oh, can I swear on the show?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, I don't think I can do this every day. Like, this sucks. I feel like I fell asleep like 10 minutes ago. And that was basically most of my military career, was not getting enough sleep. A lot of time on reverse cycle, especially, you know, deployed in the global war on terror, where, you know, it's the units that I rolled with, we were always going out at night. So I meant sleeping during the day. And it's been a battle for me. So because sleep was such an issue, something I had such an issue with, I really had to seek out ways, you know, through supplementation, through setting up my sleep area, through sleep hygiene, that I could get adequate sleep. And now, really, finally, since I retired in 2016, I can say that in those years, in the 5 years since I retired from the military, I've gotten better sleep than any other 10-year period in my lifetime, because I'm paying attention to it more.
Yeah, 100%. What are you doing right now that you weren't doing before? And, you know, I'm someone who else has struggled in the past with some severe and very weird at times sleep issues. So, you know, everything under the sun, when you look up stuff like sleep conditions, I probably had 90% of them. And you ever hear of exploding head syndrome?
No.
That's probably the scariest one of all. It's where you go to sleep and you're like in the middle of your sleep, and all of a sudden it feels like someone has a gun in the back of your head and just pulls it. And you feel like your brain literally explodes. That's why it's called that. And it's very unknown phenomenon. It's very mysterious, but I looked into it a lot, and it seems like it has something to do with heavy metals in the brain and the neurotransmitters like misfiring, and they like smack into each other. And it's just like the loudest sound you've ever heard, but you wake up and it's like, you just like, you're so scared. You're just like shocked. It's to be like if someone like tried to shoot you in the middle of your sleep. That's how loud it is.
Right.
And then like you don't know what the hell's going on for a minute, and then you kind of like calm back down, and then, you know, you're sort of back to normal after that. It's actually very innocuous. It's very safe. Like, nothing happens, but it's just the scariest thing in the world. But yeah, so that's one of the things I've dealt with, the, you know, handful of times in the past, and a bunch of other stuff. But what have you done to improve your sleep since leaving the military in the last 5 years or so? Like, what's some of the things that you're working on?
Yeah, well, I kind of started it before I got out. So my last couple of deployments, we have a terrible windstorm going on outside, so I might have some.
Yeah. It's a little lag here and there, but
for that.
Yeah, no worries, man. No worries.
Okay. Before I even got out, I discovered a white noise machine.
It was a big thing for me
because I don't consider myself to have PTSD, but I am a little bit hyper alert. So I needed something like that just to kind of drown out, you know, every little tire screech and creak of the house and everything. I have it on the lowest setting. You know, it's not incredibly loud. And people tell me they're worried about, a white noise machine, somebody's going to break into the house and I won't hear it. That's absolutely not. I've heard my bulldog, I can still hear it. You know, I don't have any issues hearing important noises over it. It just kind of drowns out all the little distracting noises. That was one thing. Dual layer blackout curtains. So we have blinds and blackout curtains on all of our windows. And that was something we discovered because obviously occasionally as an emergency medicine physician, I would have to go in and work nights, and I wanted to have a dark place to sleep. So I discovered blackout curtains. So these were things that I did before. And I knew about sleep hygiene. I'd been talked to about it before. In medical school, it's an issue that came up. And then late in my military career, because of my sleep issues, I went to my provider about it, got referred for a sleep study. The initial sleep study was kind of, the results were a little bit muddled. No, you don't really sleep bad or anything like that. You know, it's kind of a mixed bag here. So they gave me like all these handouts, you know, and I put all, you know, same thing, you know, you put all those to use about, you know, when I stop eating hard and things of that nature. Did I freeze up again?
Yeah, it's fine though. Okay. It's lagging a little bit, but you can then, it comes back.
Yeah. Okay. and then also supplementation, you know, things like magnesium, melatonin, valerian root. Adding all those things to my regimen, that was pretty key. And then the two last pieces of the puzzle. One is the one that's really challenging is the fact that the way my work is structured now, I don't have all of these hard wake up times in the morning like I did in the military. Because when I was in the military, I live 45 minutes away from my duty station, my last duty station. And even when I was stationed at Fort Bragg and I lived relatively close, that was when I had really, really early mornings. So we were talking about 5:30 wake ups all the time. Well, I don't have those anymore. You know, I get up sometime between 7 and 8 o'clock. I'm primarily working from home. I recognize not everybody can do that, but I'm in bed, lights out. We're sleeping. Sleep is the mission. This is what we're doing at 10 o'clock. And if I had to get up earlier, I would just roll that to 9 o'clock. So, you know, being dedicated and knowing there's nothing on TV that I need to see. You definitely shouldn't be watching anything that's going to aggravate you in the last couple hours. You shouldn't be watching action movies. You shouldn't be watching, as much as I love to see Tucker Carlson shred people, you shouldn't be watching that, right? You're just going to get worked up. So you put all that aside, and you get yourself in sleep mode. And then the final thing is something I kind of discovered by accident is, you know, when you're getting ready to fall asleep and you'll get kind of these disjointed images that kind of flash in your head that don't really make sense. Sometimes it's just shapes. And that's often the time that you'll get that thing where you get that sensation of falling and you kind of wake up. Because you weren't all the way asleep, right?
Yeah.
So that's called the hypnagogic state. And I had this theory. I'm like, you know, I wonder if I can manipulate kind of my own thought patterns to manifest that. So what I started doing was flashing images, just scrolling images through my mind rapidly. And none of them were anything that would, like, you know, not like an action movie. Again, you know, nothing that was going to, you know, not memories of jumping out of an airplane or anything like that. Just random images, you know, waterfalls, a field of grass, you know, an iceberg, just flashing images completely at random, letting them manifest and then pushing them aside. And then working on like lava lamp, like shapes on the inside of my eyelids. And I found that I could induce that hypnagogic state. And I thought I'd discovered something incredible. And then I looked it up and I found out that people have been experimenting with this for hundreds of years. In fact, Thomas Edison had this obsession with the hypnagogic state. He thought it was like the height of creativity. And he would do this thing where he would put himself in that state and then deliberately wake himself up and then start writing notes because he thought it awakened. He probably was prematurely killing himself, but it is what we know now. But
wow,
okay. because like you say, he wasn't getting into that deep sleep and he didn't like to sleep. And that's another thing that I talk about in that chapter. And I tell people, I'm like, the biggest hurdle that everybody needs to get over is this obsession that sleep is wasted time, because it's not. It's exactly the opposite. It's 7 to 9 hours of free meditation. It's 7 to 9 hours of muscle and soft tissue and bone recovery. It's 7 to 9 hours of learning, because that's the point that everything goes from temporary memory to permanent memory. That's when all your permanent memories get made. So if you don't sleep, the you know, whatever you learned in college that day, whatever you learned in jujitsu that day, it doesn't go to permanent memory because it never got the chance to. And also, like you mentioned, that's the point that all the toxins, especially in your nervous system, get cleansed out. The chief of which that I'm concerned with is amyloid proteins, because we know that amyloid proteins contribute to amyloid plaques, which are found in high numbers in dementia patients.
Yeah. High numbers in Joe Biden's brain.
Yeah. Well, I think he has actually Lewy body dementia, if you want to, and we could do a whole episode on that.
Why do you think that? An internist
pointed it out to me, and it's having visual hallucinations, which are not, don't typically go with Alzheimer's, although they can sometimes. Also, recently when he did the town hall where they had selected people to ask him,
clenching his fist thing.
The clenching his fist. That's pretty typical of Lewy body patients. Also, you notice he wears sunglasses all the time.
Yeah.
Saccadic eye movements are really typical of Lewy body dementia. So if his handlers didn't want people to see that, having him wear sunglasses when he's out talking to the press would be a way to hide that. So he's definitely not. I mean, we're at the point now that even Saturday Night Live has noticed that he's losing his marbles. So.
It's very clear. It was clear a few years ago. Now it's like, you know, you have to be very.
Yeah, he's never been known for being the sharpest knife in the drawer. I mean,
no.
Yeah. He's the most intelligent person
built up to it.
the most intelligent person in that family was Bo, and Bo, of course, is no longer with us. So.
Yeah, yeah. Sadly, I mean, you know, I mean, that was a tragedy. It was a legit tragedy. But yeah, so, I mean, there's a lot there, man. I mean, we could dive into so many of these different things. I want to kind of get back to the main point, but, you know, you seem like such an interesting guy. What? How did you get your medical degree and become a doctor anyways?
So I had a really unconventional path. I went in the Army 2 weeks out of high school. I went in the infantry. I went to Ranger Battalion specifically. I did a few years there. Then the logical progression was to go on to Special Forces from there. I didn't want to stay on active duty. I thought I wanted a career in federal law enforcement. So I got out. I was in the Special Forces National Guard. Subsequently, I ended up getting qualified as a Special Forces engineer, sergeant, a demo guy. And I decided I wanted to be back on active duty. So I did that for a few years. And the job was great, but I wanted another challenge. So I decided to go to the Special Forces Medics course. Special Forces Medics are really looked up to in the SF community as just unparalleled experts in what they do. And I'm like, I want to give that a shot. I want the mental challenge. So I went to the medics course, found out I did it really just for the challenge. Like, this will be mentally challenging, not because I had some calling of, you know, I wanted to alleviate pain or help the sick and the injured or anything like that. That didn't hit me until I was doing it. And I'm like, wow, I can make a difference to, you know, little things can really make a difference to people. And being able to look at somebody and figure out, you know, diagnose what's wrong with them and then, you know, give them the medicine or, you know, get them to the procedure that they need, the treatment that they need, that does a lot of good. And that's very rewarding. And I got a little bit addicted to that feeling of just, you know, wanting to help people in pain, help people with a medical need. So I made that, and the decision I made at that point was, you know, my career is definitely going to end in medicine. Like, I'm going to do the SF medic thing as long as I can. Eventually I'll get promoted out of that. So I need to start looking for a way to navigate my way into long-term medicine. I wanted to be a physician assistant. That was denied to me because the Army physician assistant program at the time, they put an age cap and a time and service cap on it. But I found out there was no such cap on going to med school and coming back to the special operations community as a physician. So did my undergraduate, did night school. When I had gotten out for a while, I knocked out like a year of college. So I was able to do another 3 years. I did 3 years and a year and a half going to night school while on active duty and applied to medical school. I got accepted at four different schools. I ultimately went to the Uniformed Services University, which is the federal Department of Defense Medical School in Bethesda, Maryland, and then went on to EM residency afterwards and went back to the SOF community to do 6 years assigned to JSOC and five deployments before I retired.
Awesome. So what type of, was it like critical care that patients that you were working on, or was it more...
I do emergency care. Medicine. Yeah. Emergency medicine stuff. Yeah. So, nice. You know, to me, I got a pretty short attention span. So, you know, the idea of being in an office and doing primary care and having, you know, hey, Mrs. Jones, I keep lecturing you about your blood sugar and it's still, you're not doing what you're supposed to do. I know, you know, and it's, we're going to have to amputate your feet if you don't do this. I know, you know, that's the idea of doing that day in and day out. I didn't want to do, I did, you know, God bless any pediatrician, man. Cause I was 2 days into my pediatrics rotation. I'm like, there's no way I would do this. There's just no way I do this. You know, all the critical care, you know, working in an ICU and stuff like that, really, really challenging, but not, pretty depressing too. You know, a lot of those patients don't do too well, and you're fighting these Don Quixote like battles with a lot of these patients. And that didn't appeal to me, but, also a little bit of it was selfish. It was not so much, it really wasn't about the specialty as much as it was about what specialty can I be trained in that is best going to serve the operators in special operations. If I go back there as a physician, you know, they don't need me to go back as a dermatologist. They don't need me to go back as an ophthalmologist. You know, they need people that can provide care at the point of injury. And really the choices came down to emergency medicine or general surgery, you know, or trauma surgery/trauma surgery. And I don't have the patience to be a surgeon. I just don't. And, you know, that's standing in an OR for hours of time. And I also didn't find doing surgeries. I did not find incredibly rewarding. There's a lot to be said with surgeons. I have the utmost respect for surgeons. I do think they're probably the most well-rounded physicians out there. You know, not to throw my EM colleagues under the bus, but general surgeons are just incredible all-around physicians. And they do also have the advantages that of every patient they see is legitimately sick and needs to be seen. There is no weeding out. You know, you probably didn't need to come in for this. I mean, they're cutting somebody open. They needed to be cut open. Right. So, So they're definitely going in and treating and doing good, you know, with every single patient they see, not wading through, look, you've been here 8 times for your knee pain. I keep telling you, you just need to lose weight. Okay. And they don't listen to you.
Yeah. So are you still actually, and I might've missed this, but are you still doing that work right now? Or are you officially like retired from that?
No, I'm still considered a practicing physician. I'm still, in fact, I just redid board certification in the last for 10 years. So I just redid it last year. So I'm board certified in EM for another 10 years. And I also just renewed my Texas medical license. I'm not practicing clinically at a hospital currently. I was doing what they call locums work, which means I'm basically like a part-time as needed doctor. The census has dropped so much during COVID. I worked about 4 shifts early on in COVID, and then the patient flow just dropped off so much that they didn't even have enough work to do for their regular physicians for a long period of time because people were scared to go to hospitals.
Yeah.
So subsequently what ended up happening is I ended up pulling my credentials from the few places that I was still credentialed. I'm a SWAT physician. So I do tactical med support for, a couple of state agencies and for one local agency currently. And probably next year, I'm probably going to set up kind of a boutique medical practice, doing some wellness, hormone replacement, and basically with a patient population, it's kind of centered around the same people that would be the audience for my book. So, you know, middle-aged dudes who still want to be savages.
This fall, as you get back into the swing of things, Bespoke Post is here with a new seasonal lineup of must-have Box of Awesome collections. Bespoke Post partners with small businesses and emerging brands to bring you the most unique goods every month. My favorite Box of Awesome box is the Weekender box. I have to say, this is one of the nicest bags I've ever owned. The special edition Weekender bag is beautiful and built to last. I can't wait to show off this beautiful bag this fall when I travel around. No matter what you're into, Box of Awesome has you covered. From autumn craft beers to cozy threads and camping gear essentials, Box of Awesome has collections for every part of your life. I personally can't wait to check out the Alchemy box because I can't wait to stock up my house with the pro level cocktail wares they have. To get started, take the quiz at boxofawesome.com. Your answers will help them pick the right Box of Awesome for you. They release new boxes every month across a ton of different categories. It's free to sign up and you can skip a month or cancel anytime. Each box costs only $45 but has over $70 worth of gear inside. Plus, with each Box of Awesome, you're supporting small business. 90% of everything that comes in your Box of Awesome is from a small up-and-coming brand. Get 20% off your first monthly box when you sign up at boxofawesome.com and enter the code ELITEMAN at checkout. That's boxofawesome.com, code ELITEMAN for 20% off your first box.
So what else do you talk about in the book as far as what older guys can do? I think it's 40s, what you consider older. And What are you advising these guys to be able to keep up with guys half their age, especially in the military, where it's, or not even just in the military, but something like that, where it's, you got to be pretty active, you got to be fit, you got to be in shape. What are some of the things that you're telling some of these guys?
Well, the first and foremost, and again, so it's, you know, the introduction to the book is, you know, me talking about my personal experience and being deployed and, you know, going out on target and getting in firefights, you know, at age 48 and, you know, with 19-year-olds to my left and right and, you know, young Rangers to my left and right and what that was like. That's the introduction of the book. And then I go right into what I call performance versus longevity, which is important for everybody. It's important for you, you know, and I wish I would have known about it when I was like in my 20s, is we're always concentrated on performance, on how well am I going to perform? Man, I've got whatever, you know, I want to do a 10K or I want to do a marathon or a Spartan race or a triathlon. oh, and it's next month. And I didn't, now I got to really run through my ass and train for it. And, you know, the phrase that I use in the book is, the path to injury is paved with shortcuts. So, you know that and don't do that. You know, just, you know, recognize that consistency over time equals results, and, you know, be consistent and have an eye towards longevity. You know, if something, know the difference between pain and injury. And if something feels like I might've injured myself a little bit, that it's not important. You know, you miss one day of working out now, or maybe a week now, but you're still going to be doing really well a year from now. Then the next chapter I talk about specifically about aging and all the effects on the body. You know, hey, these are real, you know, these aren't something that you can deny. And the big thing being, if I had to narrow it down to one thing and one thing only, is you do not heal and recover as fast. You just don't.
Yeah.
Right. And the entire rest of the book is about setting up, you know, how to optimize that recovery and that healing in the face of the fact that your body says you're old and older anyway, and does not want to do it. So you need to help it. And the way you're going to help it is through all the things. In my 20s and 30s, I could treat my digestive system like a landfill. I could get 4 hours of sleep and drink 2 cups of coffee. And like you say, take a, you know, 30 minute nap during the day, and I was fine. Basically, you can live on a credit card in your 20s and 30s. That bill starts to come due in your 40s and 50s. So you can't do that anymore, you know, because the compound interest is now there and you feel it every day. So you need to recognize that. So you need to optimize the nutrition, optimize your recovery time, optimize your sleep, you know, and when you are working out, you need to be smart. You know, use the wisdom of age, not only the wisdom of age that you have as an individual, knowing what you can and can't do, but the wisdom of the fact that, you know, if I look at what the average fit person is doing to work out and stay fit today in 2021, and I look at what the average fit person was doing to work out and stay fit in 1984, they're completely different. So I notice a lot of the, you know, a lot of the older guys my age, like, I'm old school. You know, I said, this new thing, your kids and your CrossFit and your, you know, whatever. I'm doing it this way because this is how we always did it. Hey, guess what? We were dumb back then. You know, we're talking about the era when NFL football teams in the 70s and 80s would have no water practices. No water today. Nobody gets water during practice because you got to get used to that, you know. I mean, just the thought of that now, it's like, oh my God, that's like the stupidest thing ever.
Yeah.
Right?
Dehydrate know? Everybody.
Yeah. You know, a big thing that in the military in the 80s, and unfortunately, I think some people are still doing this, is ruck runs. So putting 45 pounds on your back, ill-fitting most of the time, unbalanced most of the time, and then running. Okay. Compressing every
miles.
Disc in your spinal column. Yeah. Miles, you know, just, we're going to go out and we're going to do a 5 mile ruck run, you know, just complete, that's completely insane, you know? And it's like, you know, I've got an unhealed fracture in my left foot from 1986 from doing dumb shit like that. So just, you know, don't do dumb shit like that. You know, take advantage of the fact that all this information is out there now. But you also need to look at it with an eye towards, you know, when you're soliciting advice from experts on this, you know, don't go in there and say, I want expert advice on how to work out as a 55-year-old. Because usually what you'll get is, okay, 3 days a week, we want you to go for a walk for 20 minutes, you know, and here's some stretching. And then on Saturday, you're going to do a very light 20 minute vinyasa yoga, you know, oh, that Bikram is too hard for you. You're going to do this easier yoga and all this other, you know, and I love yoga, but you know, it's, you can still do all the hardcore stuff. You got to warm up a little bit. You got to stretch a little bit more. When you do start to feel it, you got to know when to back off, right? You know, the young guy that was like, I got to impress a chick right now, so I got to power through that. That guy's gone. So don't try to be that guy again. You know, be the guy who wants to still be doing this at age 65 and age 75 in some form, and recognize that if you push through injury because now you're going to have the advantage of the quick healing that you had when you were 20. You know, when I broke my hand, I think I was 16 years old when I broke my hand playing high school football. And I think I was in a cast for like maybe 3 weeks and it healed just fine. And I can tell you right now, if I got an identical fracture now, it would take me longer to recover just because your body doesn't heal as fast.
Yeah. How long do you think it would take right now? 6 weeks, maybe?
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, it would definitely be longer. I mean, just, you know, your osteoblasts aren't upregulated. Like, I mean, if you break a bone as a teenager, something that we see, in kids and in teens in medicine. In fact, this is like a joke that you'll play on the interns is they'll come in and the alkaline phosphatase is astronomically high. And that's because of rapid bone turnover, because they're growing, right? So that's a joke we would play on interns in the emergency room, is they would order a lab panel on a pediatric patient and the alk phos would be high. And we'd be like, oh my God, what are you gonna do about this alk phos? You should probably go look it up and see what that is. Maybe they got cancer. Maybe they got a liver problem. Oh my God, why is their alk phos so high? And the intern would like freak out and go scurrying around. But all kids, their alk phos is high because the bone turnover is so high. And you break a bone as a child or even as a teen, and you're going to heal faster because your bones are used to constantly remodeling themselves anyway.
Yeah.
My bones aren't really remodeling themselves at all anymore. Right. It's, you know, I'm steadily getting, you know, we lose height as we age. If you look at my vertebrae now and you compared them, if somewhere out there, there's an X-ray of my back at age 22. Cause I had a mild back injury. That was like the first of my back injuries. Now at 55, I feel great, I'm not injured, but if you put the two X-rays side by side and asked somebody, which one of these people is in pain right now, they would point to the 55-year-old me X-ray, because I guarantee, I mean, my MRI looks just like absolute garbage. I mean, my vertebrae are compressed, from a lifetime of carrying weight around. I have four herniated discs. And my back's straight where it shouldn't be and curved where it shouldn't be. So I've got a lot of issues there, but it's not like I don't have like constant, you know, I got a little ache pretty much every day, but it's, you know, it's not like I'm fighting to stand up straight or, you know, I can't, you know, I did bent over rows at the gym today and it wasn't an issue. So.
Yeah. It's something, you know, it's like all those old time guys, you go to the gym and it's like, you know, they show you pictures of themselves from 30 years ago and they were like jacked and they were huge. And then you look at them now and you're like, you know, like what happened, dude? And they can barely do any more lifts and they had all kinds of problems and shoulder problems and elbow problems and this and that. And then, you know, they're the guys who were telling, not all of them, but some of them, they're the guys telling you, you know, you got to work harder. You got to lift heavier squats. You got to do this. Mm-hmm. And it's like all the exercises that ruin their body is the ones that they're telling you to do. And it's like you said, I think we've gotten a lot smarter since the 80s and 90s about which ones we should be doing and which ones we probably shouldn't be doing. And like, at what point you want to push, what point you want to rest. It's not all about pushing all the time. It's actually detrimental to always do that. There's a time and a place for that, I think, but oftentimes I think that's lost on a lot of people. And especially, you know, when even some of the younger guys going to the gym for the first time, you look around and a lot of these guys don't know what the hell they're doing. And they're going to be those guys who are, you know, busted up in 20, 30 years from now, because they're not doing it the right way.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because there was a conversation, a three-way conversation going on in the gym today, with my coach and one of the other, gym patrons. So, PJ Brownell is my individual coach at OPEX Round Rock here in Texas. And, PJ's, was talking specifically about CrossFit, and I'm not bashing CrossFit. I know a lot of people get great success out of CrossFit. And I think a great thing that CrossFit's done is it's really energized people about fitness. But one of the problems that's out there is like people go into CrossFit on their first day and they see people doing these dynamic, kinetic chain exercises. Yeah. Olympic lifts, especially. Right. And they see the pace at which they do them and the weights at which they do them. And they're like, okay, all right, well, I got 20 pounds on that guy. And you know what? I used to squat and deadlift this much, so I can, you know, I'll adjust a little bit, and I'll just do it just exactly the way that he's doing it. Right. Well, what they fail to realize is that guy's been doing CrossFit for 15 years. So the speed at which he does that dynamic Olympic lift and the fluidity and the weight That's 15 years of training. That's 15 years of training his muscles, his connective tissues, his nervous system, right? So you get over there next to him and try to do half or a third the weight that he's doing at the speed that he's doing it, and you're probably going to get hurt. So, you know, people need to keep that in mind. And that's why I always tell people, if I think almost any, unless you're in just exquisite shape now, you know, almost everybody can benefit from sitting down with a personal trainer and, you know, figuring out what they should and shouldn't be doing based on their fitness goals and getting some one-on-one instruction in, you know, the right and wrong ways to do things. And, you know, when I started my current fitness program a few years ago, I didn't know what a Romanian deadlift was. You know, I'd seen people do Turkish get-ups, but I didn't really know what they were. It's, you know, to me, it was, they're doing a jujitsu stand-up technique, what we call stand and base. They're just doing it holding something, right? Well, they're not exactly the same. I mean, they're a little bit different. I still don't know how to kip, and I don't kip. I'm going to learn to kip sometime between now and next year because I want to do the Murph Challenge next year, and there's no way I'm going to do 100 pull-ups without kipping, especially with a weight vest on. So I am going to learn how to kip. But guess what? If in learning how to kip, I decide it's not for me, then I'll modify that section of the Murph next year, and I just won't do it. You know, yeah. It's, you know, it's when I get to the pearly gates, St. Peter is going to go, "Hey, I'm sorry, you didn't do 100 pull-ups in that Murph, so we're not letting you in." And I think Murph himself would probably vouch for me to get in, you know, just for trying it. So people need to keep that in mind. You know, modify what you need to, but you can still, like I say, you can still be a savage. Just be smart about it.
Yeah. Smart savage. Makes sense. What else are you recommending for guys as far as maybe diet or supplements go? I know there's a supplement section in the book too. I took a look at that before, and it seems like you had a lot of good recommendations there.
Yeah. I break them all down, and that's, you know, I've been piecemealing all the supplements that you see in that chapter for years. And during COVID, my two projects during COVID, one ended up being writing the book, but before that, actually, I started my own supplement company. So Greybeard Performance, the umbrella of Greybeard Performance is we're a life and lifestyle brand. But you know, our main focus is on the supplements. Cause I got tired. I spent so many years researching the supplements and figuring out not only what worked for me, but why it worked, like looking up the clinical data on it. And, you know, I could throw out all the big name companies whose supplements I tried over time. And most of them are pretty good, but none of them, what they lacked was they weren't tailored for, you know, typically you have supplements that are, if they're for high performance athletes, they're for the 20 something high performance athlete, right? If they're for somebody my age, they put the term silver in there, right? So this is whatever silver, and this is for you old guys, right? Drink your Ensure and take these supplements with it. And I wanted something that was tailored for, you know, somebody getting after it and being very active, but at my age, you know, so, you know, that, and that's why the first formulations that I came out with were the longevity formula for, you know, for just that reason, because the longevity formula is all about healing and recovery, and the energy formula, because that was the second biggest complaint that I got from guys my age is sometimes I just don't have the energy to go work out. And I tried taking a pre-workout and, oh my God, I thought I was going to die. Right. I thought I was going to have to take a trip to the ER. So I didn't want one of these nasty, dirty, you know, pre-workouts. So I came up with a formulation that was clean, natural, organic. It's even vegan. And you take it and you feel great, but you don't feel like your hair's on fire and it doesn't last too long. Like typically, on a night that I'm going to jiu-jitsu, I'll take it 30 minutes before going to class. I still sleep fine that night. There's not like a sudden crash. I feel juiced when I go in there, or, you know, juiced in a good way, not like juiced. And all through class, there's no point that I run out of gas in the tank and just crash. But then I get home and I wind down and I go to sleep and I don't have any issues because I'm not all jacked up on a bunch of things that I can't even pronounce. So, that was my impetus for doing that. And, you know, over time, I have two supplements out now, a third getting ready to come out probably in, hopefully that'll be my vitality formula. But everything in that chapter is what I take. And I think supplementation as we age, especially in Western society, you know, we've leached a lot of the minerals out of our soil. a lot of the food that we're getting is, you know, antibiotics and steroids and chemicals, and, you know, and the animals are ingesting pesticides and everything else. You know, industrial farming, industrial ranching definitely has an impact on the quality of our food. So I do think that supplementation is important, especially for active people. And usually when you see these studies that they say, well, vitamins and supplements, you don't really need them. They're looking at average people. They're not looking at people that are having a high rate of metabolic turnover in their bodies because of everything they're doing. So I think supplementation is important, and, you know, that's why I launched my own brand, and that's why I talk about it in the book.
Nice. Awesome, man. Yeah. We got our own brand too, Elite Life Nutrition, for the podcast. And
nice.
You know, just like you, man, we got all the, you know, essential ingredients, you know, the magnesiums of the world, the multivitamins, the zinc, the
simple things like magnesium and zinc are so overlooked, and they're so vitally important.
Yeah. You know, 80% is the estimate right now of people that are deficient in magnesium. And, you know, you mentioned a good point too with the studies, that they'll do a lot of these studies, but they'll either do them with, say, synthetic forms of the vitamins or the minerals, or they'll do it in amounts that are basically nothing. Like, you're getting, instead of the actual amount that you're supposed to take, say, even a vitamin C, you know, Linus Pauling's work and all that for years, where he was doing these studies and he was showing tremendous benefits for all kinds of common colds and flu and heart disease and even AIDS when he started doing them. And when AIDS came around in the 80s, he was doing them and showing incredible effects. But then when they redid his studies, instead of taking, say, 10 grams of IV vitamin C, they would give somebody like, say, 500 milligrams a day of just a cheap synthetic form of vitamin C, which did nothing. I mean, you're not going to really have any benefit on the flu if you're taking just five or even less than that. Maybe it might have been like 100 milligrams, something ridiculous. But the point is, a lot of those studies are flawed when they say, oh, these vitamins aren't really important, this and that. And especially when we're talking about how depleted our soil is and how you know, loaded up our animals are with antibiotics and all kinds of junk that you really shouldn't be taking into your system. It's more important, I think, than ever before to be on some decent supplements and things that actually do help the body.
Absolutely. There was a section that I started to put in that chapter, and I ultimately took it out because I thought it made it way too confusing. I talk specifically in that chapter about the dosages that I take, but what's really important, and you know this, is what's bioavailable, because sometimes you might be taking, okay, this has however many IUs of whatever it is you're taking. But then when you figure out the bioavailability of that, it's like a quarter of it. Whereas if it's sourced differently, you might take half of what the IUs are, but all of that is bioavailable. So you're getting, like you say, a better supplement. And a lot of it does have to do with sourcing. And I use, I'll go ahead and give them a plug. I use NutriCaps USA as the company that makes all my stuff, right? I'm not pill pressing the shit in my garage. You know, I went to a legit FDA inspected and approved facility, you know, to do all of my stuff. And, you know, they are really good about where they source all of their raw materials to go into these supplements, and that's, otherwise I wouldn't do business with them.
Yeah, you got to do that. They're probably NSF too, and definitely GMP certified, which is, you know, top of the line stuff. So yeah, you got to go to a high quality place like that. You can't, you know, have them made overseas, especially in places like China, which we know is just rot with corruption and fraud.
Yeah.
And, you know, all the other stuff. If you're making it in the USA, it's GMP. For sure.
You'll end up, you get stuff overseas, you're going to end up with like trace rhino horn and Lord knows what else in there.
Yeah. I mean, it's all kinds of crap. I saw a documentary too, a few years ago, where they were even faking honey. So like even store-bought honey, which usually will come from places like China, you know, the one with the teddy bear and everything. It's like such crap. Real raw organic honey is one of the best foods you'll ever have. It's so beneficial for you, immune system wise, et cetera. But the ones you'll get from a store shelf is just, it's fake honey. Actually, they do a whole process in China where they'll change the molecules and such of specific sugars that aren't from the honey. And then they'll make it look like sort of like a Frankenstein honey, where they're pretending that it actually is honey, then they'll ship it out. And the US was cracking down on them because they caught on to them a few years ago, but then they were shipping them out to neighboring countries like Singapore, Malaysia, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And then they would sell them to them. And then they would, those countries would sell them to the US through China. And so they would still be coming into the, you know, to the country and getting put on these shelves. And people are thinking when they buy these honeys from grocery stores that they're getting real honey. It's totally fake and useless, actually probably harming you, honey.
Yeah. We have the only, we have honey in our pantry and it's from a, there's a local place called Round Rock Honey just down the road.
Yeah.
That does it. And it's, yeah. And they've got, you know, you can go tour the place and, you know, there's, you can taste the hint of clover in there.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's good honey. It's really good honey.
That's awesome, man. That's so good. And yeah, it's so important to, you know, be taking the right types of ingredients and, you know, the right. So another one too, that comes to mind is like folic acid. It's one of the crappiest things you can put into your body. It's literally doing nothing. The right thing is folate. You got to have actual folate to get that absorbed into your body. And, you know,
well, and again, that goes to the bioavailability, right? Because if it goes in as folate, your body will metabolize that. And it will turn that into the bioactive compound that you need. Whereas folic acid, there's a step missing in there.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And you know, you go to the store shelves, though, any top line grocery store, 90% of the bottles on there are folic acid, and some of the other ones is essentially the same type of thing across the board. They're just using the cheaper versions because they're cheaper to make. As you know, mm-hmm. guy who's making this yourself, you go the cheap way. You're paying pennies as opposed to dollars for an actual real product. And then of course the profit margins shrink, which sucks for the business, but also, you know, sucks for the customer when they're not getting real benefits from that. But
right.
What have you learned from taking jiu-jitsu? It seems like that's a pretty important part of your life right now. And it seems like something that you kind of dedicated to yourself. What has that sort of taught you and what's the importance of having that?
You know, it's, first and foremost, I got to say, you know, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. You know,
really?
Ranger school, you know, going through the Ranger indoctrination program, going through Ranger school, jump school is easy. That doesn't count. I got drunk every night, but, special forces assessment and selection, special forces qualification course, language school, medical school, Jiu-Jitsu makes them all, you know, pale by comparison. I mean, it's cause it's not just like running fast. It's not just like lifting heavy weights. It's just not, you know, in football, I was never a finesse guy. I played linebacker and offensive line at 5'6", which is not a good idea, obviously. And it was because I'm not fast and I'm not, I don't have really good fine motor. You know, it's good enough, but you know, it's, I was never going to be able to sprint out there and be a receiver. I was never going to be a quarterback. I'm not built for speed, you know, to be in the backfield. Jiu-jitsu is physically very challenging. You know, there's a huge physical aspect of it too, but it's mental. I mean, you're playing chess while somebody is trying to choke you unconscious and you're trying to think three chess moves ahead and keep track of what pieces he has on the board and what pieces I have on the board and protect your queen and protect your king. And, but all the while, you know, imagine doing that inside of a dryer, you know, while you're just rolling around, you're hot, you're sweaty, and you're trying to keep this chessboard going the whole time. So I was drawn to it for that reason. I mean, it really deconstructs the ego in such a tremendous way. And the fact that it's something, when it comes to the fighting arts, it's something that you know, I can go in there now and I can go full speed, you know, cause we're not punching each other in the face. So I don't have to worry about TBI or CTE. So we can go full speed. We can go all out, you know, as hard as we can go and, you know, get your heart rate up into the 160s and really push the limits. And other fighting arts, you can't really do that. You know, it's like, okay, we're going to spar, but you know, you got gloves and you got headgear and you got a mouthpiece and you know, you stung your opponent pretty good there. We need to back off a little bit, you know, it's, and for good reason, cause you don't want to hurt people in training, but, I just have this tremendous appreciation for jiu-jitsu and, you know, it's part kinesiology, part physics. It's part anatomy and physiology. It's just a little bit of everything. And it's just so challenging. You know, I'm a, I like to tell people I'm the world's worst two-stripe purple belt, which I'm probably not the worst, but you know, it feels that way, you know, still going in and getting my ass handed to me. But it's, you know, there's also those moments of triumph, you know, when I choke out a 28-year-old who outweighs me, and all the while, and then leaning back after choking him out, and he's breathing way harder than I am, you know, and part of that's because I'm playing a little bit more of an old man's game, you know, and pacing myself and knowing where I can take a break. But, I love Brazilian jiu-jitsu. I can't say enough good things about it, but martial arts in general, I think people can benefit from them because there's, you know, the structure, the athleticism, the discipline, everything about it, you know, just, you know, to me, just draws me into that. And that's what, you know, keeps me coming back again and again and again.
Yeah. I absolutely love it too. It's my favorite of all the martial arts is Brazilian jiu-jitsu. I actually haven't done it in a little while now. I've been meaning to get back. But I've done it all. I've done boxing. I've done wrestling. Jiu-jitsu, of course. I did a little judo for a while, but of all of them, jiu-jitsu was by far my favorite. It's just, there's so many elements to it. Mm-hmm. And I like the fact, you know, being a little guy, a smaller guy too, 5'7", it's like we have a chance against some of these giants when we go into this game with, you know, standing up boxing. If you're facing someone 50 pounds heavier than you, you know, it's really tough. Wrestling, you kind of have no chance. If you're wrestling somebody of equal sort of technique than you, guy 50 pounds heavier than you, he's going to beat you probably 99 times out of 100. But jiu-jitsu is different because it's more brain, like you said, it's more chess, it's more mental. So even mm-hmm. if some guy has a basic, you know, understanding of skill level, if you can outsmart him, you can get into certain positions, you can do different moves, you can even, you know, pull that toughness through of like, you don't want to quit. If he has you in almost a compromised position, you can fight through it oftentimes. Mm-hmm. There's just so many more elements to it that I think can even the playing field for mm-hmm. smaller guys going up against bigger guys. And for that reason, I think one of the reasons I really just kind of fell in love with it. And it's just the competition of it is it's incredible, man. And the way you described it too, it's making me want to jump back into it, you know, tomorrow. So I might have to do it again.
I had yesterday I went to a John Danaher class, which was just absolutely amazing. So
yeah,
Danaher's just so good. And he breaks everything down. He's 54. You know, okay. and 54 and had a hip replaced and all kinds of problems, but you know, he's still getting there teaching every day. And just, he has such a keen eye. Just, I'm in awe every time I go in there. You know, I try not to let it show too much. I don't want him to think I'm some scary stalker dude or something, but I'm literally in awe just every time he's teaching.
Wow. And, we've got to wrap things up in just a couple moments, but, what was the biggest thing you think you've taken away from your 30 plus years and the military and many of those years being in special forces? What are some of those or the biggest lesson you think that you've learned from that you apply now in your day-to-day life?
The biggest thing I think would be, you know, self, you know, it's kind of twofold. It's, you know, self-reliance, but combined with, you know, being in a tribe that lifts you up. You know, because that's the big thing, you know, when you talk to guys about, you know, what they miss about the military or, you know, what, you know, guys who get out and they or girls who get out and they go through these bouts of depression, it's the camaraderie and the tribe is really what they miss. But, you know, the self-reliance is really important. Be at the right place at the right time in the right uniform. For the most part, you know, with some flaws as anything has, you know, the military, for most of my career was kind of the last bastion of the meritocracy, in modern society. You know, there's so many things that we see, you know, whether it's in the boardroom or in the classroom, that it's really not a meritocracy. You know, it's a combination of who, you know, and what you say, you know, it could very well get you promoted or get you that degree or get you the tenure. Right. But in the military, it's, you know, for the most part, you know, the people fake, I'm not going to say people don't fake their way through a military career because they do, but in the environment that I was in the soft community and as an operator, it was a meritocracy. And, you know, you knew how fit people were, you knew how well they could shoot, you knew if they were dependable and were going to show up on time, you knew how well they were going to, if they were mature when you deployed somewhere, if you were going to be able to depend on them to not, you know, go crazy and run off. And what do you mean you're living in an apartment in Bogota with your new girlfriend? You're supposed to be here doing this mission with us. You know, you knew all those things about people. And people rose and fall based on their merits, their maturity, their work ethic, their fitness, and their technical and tactical proficiency. And that, again, that fed into the whole tribal thing that, you know, we all kept each other accountable. We lifted each other up, you know, on those times that somebody needed a little bit more of a hand up because it just wasn't their day. They got that. If they were the repeat offender, like, hey, man, we're always having to slow down for you, they got a little extra kick in the ass. Ultimately, if they gave you the finger and like, fuck you, I'm not getting any better. All right. Guess what? You're expelled from the tribe, you know, go to the edge of the volcano and never come back. So, you know, those were the big things. And I talk about in the book, you know, I talk about, you know, self-reliance a little bit, but I talk in depth, about the tribe and, you know, people, if you weren't in a military, you can still find a tribe, you know, whether it's a jiu-jitsu tribe, a CrossFit tribe, whatever, you know, you can still find a group of like-minded people that are going to lift you up, that are all going to bring their experience and their expertise to the table. And you're going to share with one another. And you're all going to make each other better. And ultimately you get this mentality of, I don't want to be the weak link. Well, you know, on that one day you might be the weak link because, hey, we had to swim this lake and I suck at swimming and I was the last guy. You know, well, okay, if I was the last guy, you know, I need to go on weekends and I need to swim because I need to get better. Or I definitely am not going to be the worst at everything. You know, I want to be the best at something and I want to be as good as my peers in everything. And, you know, that with that, you know, comes bragging rights and pride and everything else, pride in yourself and pride in the unit.
Yeah, I love that. And, you know, meritocracy is so important. And I think it is being lost, especially in, you know, the times we're facing right now. There's a lot of wacky things going on. A lot of people in positions that they shouldn't be in. A lot of people getting things that they don't really deserve. And, you know, just really quickly, as someone who was in the military 30 plus years, what are your thoughts on how the country is right now in this state? And what do you see in the next few years as far as like your predictions for the future, or maybe like what we as Americans and many of us patriots who love our country, what should we be maybe doing?
Yeah. Wow. That's
a big one.
That's a big one. That's a layered question.
And honestly, we kind of ran this episode as fast as we could today. And you're such an interesting guy that I'd love to have you back on again, if you're open to it.
I'd love to.
Maybe we could dive more into this stuff too. In the follow-up.
Yeah. I'd love to. We can talk about this. So I thought you were going somewhere else with that. I thought you specifically, I thought you were going to ask me about the withdrawal from Afghanistan. Cause lately, every time I go on a show, that's what they want to talk about.
That is disaster.
And you know, again, we could talk about that at length and, you know, things that were done wrong. And, we're in an interesting time as a country right now. And the country is very divided. So I would say to everyone, regardless of which side of the political aisle that you are on. And, you know, to me, this is a unit in the military cannot function if everybody's at each other's throats. You know, I've been on teams where people didn't get along. And it's not that any of those people are necessarily bad people. It's just, you don't get along. You know, he doesn't appreciate my sense of humor. You know, I don't appreciate the fact that, you know, he feels that at 5:01 every day, he's got to crack a beer and sit around the team room and bullshit for 2 hours, you know, when everybody else wants to go home. Right. You know, we just have, you know, that's a bad thing. He's not harming anybody and he's doing his job in a great way. Me being a sarcastic guy who always has to be the guy with the wise ass remark. Some people didn't like that in me. Right. And that's kind of where we are as a country right now is this division keeps getting wider and wider and wider. And it's been depersonalized, right? And the reason it's been, I used the term tribe and I used it in the good way, right? But there's another form of tribalism, seeing huge political and ideological tribalism. And what we're doing on both sides of that is we are dehumanizing the people on the other side. So as bad as things look right now, you know, and the majority of Americans think the country is going in the wrong direction right now, regardless of political affiliation. I just heard this today, right? That this is like 52% said we're going in the wrong direction as a company, as a country, right? 30 something percent said we're going the right way, right? And then, you know, everybody else is kind of, I don't know, I'm not paying attention.
Yeah.
This is not a political specific. This has nothing to do with who won the last election or who might win the next election. This is, we all agree we're kind of going the wrong way. Everybody needs to watch the Netflix documentary, The Social Dilemma. So if you haven't seen it, you need to watch it, because that gives you a lot of insight into why kind of the root of this is social media. And, you know, it keeps feeding us information that keeps us in our tribalism, keeps us in our silo, keeps us in our echo chamber, and keeps us dehumanizing the people on the other side of this. So what we all need to recognize is, just because somebody disagrees with me, they are a human being. They probably 90% of the time, or in 90% of things, have the same ideologies and values that I do. Everyone wants a healthy and safe environment for their children / the next generation. Everyone wants, for the most part, to be left alone and allowed to live their life, you know, worshiping their deity in the way that they would like to, practicing, you know, whatever they do in the bedroom with nobody getting involved, reading books that they want to read, saying things that are their opinion without being persecuted for those opinions. Those are values that we all agree on, right? So let's agree that everybody else is entitled to, we're entitled to those things. Everybody else is entitled to those things. And that we have more in common than what we have not in common. You know, there are more things that join us as Americans than separate us. And that has nothing to do with who anybody voted for in the last election. But once you start to dehumanize people, you feel justified in lashing out at them and just and saying these outlandish things. I have members of my own family who are doing this to me now. I have members of my own family who I haven't talked to in decades. I have a cousin I haven't talked to since 1985, lashed out at me in an email that I couldn't even, for the most part, make sense of, because he heard me on a podcast and figured out that I have generally conservative / libertarian values, right? So he disagrees with that. So he's lashing out at me. And I'm not going to get into all the pathology behind him lashing out at me or why he has the beliefs that he does, because that's not important. What is important is that we don't dehumanize people. You know, it's, you know, recognize people as individuals with rights. And the reason they think different from you is not because they're stupid. Okay. It's not because they're evil. It's because they received maybe slightly different information than you received, and or they processed that information in a different framework than you did, because their life experience is slightly different, right? Recognize that and have these conversations, and have conversations about what unites us, not what divides us. I don't listen to political podcasts driving to and from the gym anymore. I was addicted to them for a while. I listen to Waco 100 country music going to and from the gym. It's heavy, hardcore heavy metal when I'm in the gym, but it's country going to and from, right? I don't like the place that all of that political angst puts me. And even when it's coming from the wiser voices in the political arena, it still has a tendency to push you towards that tribalism and push you further and further into dehumanizing. And the, you know, you and I are, there's some great things about the age in which we live, right? We're recording this over a Zoom call right now, where even though we're separated by many, many miles, we can do this communication. But people see the avatars of social media and the things people post, and they don't see that as a human being. They see that as an idea, and they feel justified in lashing out and saying, and I've gotten threats, you know, and all kinds of shit over social media, because number one, they feel it, part of it is they feel safe in doing so, right? Because I guarantee the guy who's guarantee if he were sitting next to me, there's no way he would say that. Okay. But it's not just because he feels safe. Like, oh, he can't, I'm through a computer, so he can't hit me. He feels like I'm not a person. Like I'm a just representative of ideas that he doesn't agree with. So he feels justified and on his side of the aisle, he's been told time and time again that because I believe the way I believe, I represent certain things that I don't. And I've gotten sucked into this trap I'm off Twitter for a couple of reasons, but that's one of the reasons is because it's a political cesspool. Just don't get caught up in that, you know, and realize that tribalism is the bad thing and it's what's dividing us, and don't let it happen. And America is going to withstand this. I mean, we've been through a civil war, for God's sakes. We've been through a civil war, been through a great depression. We've been through two world wars. We've been through the 60s, man. I mean, this is what you're seeing play out right now. This really is 1968, 1969 all over again. I mean, many of the talking points that you see people getting up before crowds of people with picket signs and making identical to 1968, 1969. A lot of the mistakes that we're making at the federal and state and even local level, identical to that time period. We weathered that. All right. We made it through. We had a rough patch going through most of the 70s. By the 80s and 90s, we were on track again. So we're going to get on track again. We just have to have faith in that. And don't, you know, the country's going to survive. So worry less about the country. Worry more about yourself and what you're doing. Are you being a good person every day? Are you doing what's best for you and your family every day? And you're not infringing on others. If you're doing those things, then you're going to be fine and the country's going to be fine too. So don't lose a whole lot of sleep over it, but it's not end of days by any means.
Yeah. I hope you're right, man. I think you're right. And I hope you're right. But it is some crazy hectic times, but I think your approach is the right one too. It's about uniting and getting together and seeing common ground, even if it appears like when a polarizing topic comes up that you guys just can't get along, you can't see eye to eye. It's a good point you made. I think on 90% of the issues overall, we all want the same types of things. We all want the same, you know, basic healthcare and safety and you know, all those types of things that make us good people, good human beings. Even if someone differs with you politically, it doesn't make them a bad person. And I think finding that common ground is really the key. And, you know, like you, I got sucked up into a lot of the political discussions as well. And, you know, got more into the tribalism type of thing, the negative type of that, which is out there for sure. And I've sort of backed away in the past few months, but you know, I think it's important for both sides to come together at the end of the day. And I'm all about uniting and figuring out how to do that. It is really tough in this climate that we're in right now, but I think there is a way to do it.
Also, I would encourage everybody, and this takes a lot of courage and it can be difficult also, I would encourage people to stand up for what's right.
Yeah.
You know, and that doesn't mean I'm not saying standing up for what right means you have to go get the sign and go down to the courthouse. Okay. That doesn't mean that. But when you see people dogpiling on somebody, you know, and I've seen people on my side of issues dogpiling people on the other side of the issues. And I've had to step in and say, hey, no, they're entitled to that opinion. You know, we're not doxing people, canceling people, that's not right. And we do all need to stand up against that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's a tide that can come from either direction. And we can't allow it to happen. And, you know, standing up, I saw a video, you know, this is a microcosm of it, but, you know, tempers are running high. You know, all these assaults that you hear about happening on airlines and stuff now.
Yeah. There's a lot of them.
You know, If you see something, do something. Not if you see something, say something. Okay. That time for that phrase is gone. If you see something, do something. You know, try to de-escalation is great. De-escalation is a two-way street though. That other person has to be open to de-escalation. But, you know, if you see something getting heated and you see an opportunity to maybe intervene as the disinterested third party and de-escalate, don't turn around. Don't film it on your phone. People on the train filming a sexual assault in progress on their phone and not even calling 911.
It's insane.
That's crazy. And then I saw another one of a guy that assaulted a woman on a very crowded subway. And he came on and there's not a beginning to the video. I guess he was like yelling at some people or something. And some lady said, "Hey man, you need to take a chill pill." And he punched her dead in the face. Now, fortunately he hit like a 12-year-old girl and she was unfazed by it, but three adult males were standing immediately around him and watched this happen. And it was obvious he was getting ready to hit her. Nobody did anything before, during, or after. You know, one person filmed it. Everyone else did nothing. Okay. Wow. We need to, you know, I want to be in a society where if somebody sees an injustice being done to anyone, that they're going to step up and they're going to do something. You know, like this Marine that you saw, that was instinctual, the guy in the convenience
store. Yeah, that was cool.
That disarmed that punk who came in to rob the gas station. Right. So, you know, cool so thing. in addition to all the other stuff that we said, you know, about, you know, avoid the tribalism, avoid the malignancy, but, you know, pick your battles and stand up for basic human decency, not a political cause. Fuck that. Okay. Yeah. Not proposition, whatever, or state bill, whatever. I could give it two shits about that. Stand up for basic human decency, stand up for treating other human beings like human beings and letting them live a safe and secure life and make a living, you know, regardless of where the heat's coming from. Just do that.
Love it. Awesome. Awesome way to end it, man. What's a final takeaway message and then a place our listeners can check out your book and your work?
Takeaway message, you know, especially if you're one of the guys who my book was written for, you know, dudes over 40 is, don't get caught up in the trap that people will tell you that average is normal. Okay. Average is not normal. Average is just average. Okay. Being 35 pounds overweight on three different medications, that's not normal. That's average. Okay. But you don't need to be that way. Okay. So don't be average, be exceptional / normal. So that's the takeaway message that I would give to everybody. Graybeardperformance.com is my website. Graybeard Performance also has its own Instagram account, as well as its own Facebook page. And I have my own personal Instagram account, drmikesimpson.com, DrMikeSimpson. So if you want to see me post funny memes and talk about jujitsu, that's a good place to follow me.
Awesome. Guys, check them out for sure. Mike, thanks again for coming on, man. I really appreciate it. And I know our guys are going to love this one. So we're going to follow up and get you on the show again soon, hopefully for a part two and cover a lot more. But yeah, take care, man. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, brother. Be safe.
All right, guys, I hope you enjoyed that episode. But before you go, there's one last thing I'd like you to do, and that's this. Subscribe to our podcast right now if you haven't already. By subscribing to the podcast, you get every single episode the minute they're released. Get all of our Elite Man podcast episodes and all of our world-class advice absolutely free. Subscribe now if you haven't already and become an Elite Man today. And yes, if you do love the podcast, leave us an amazing review. We really do appreciate it.